Today is September the 27th, 2017. Welcome to the Personal Computer Show. This is the original personal computer radio show of all things computing. I'm Hank Key, and I'm in the studio with my colleague, Joe King. Podcasts of the program is available on prn.fm, wbai.org, and our website, pcradioshow.org. When WBAI is in a membership drive, a replacement program may be scheduled, but the regular program will always be available each week on prn.fm. And let's start off with a couple of news items on Apple.
You know, Hank, last week we talked about the new Apple that was, they had two versions, the iPhone 8 and the iPhone 10, and the 10 they spelled with the Roman numeral X. Well, this is brand new, and as we know from Apple, we always expect the newest technology, the newest design, the newest everything. Even though Steve Jobs is no longer with them, we still do expect that. Well, one of the things that was announced almost simultaneously was the new T-Mobile 5G LTE network. Now, as we know, the LTE is a 4G network, and we were really looking for the newest things from Apple. Guess what, Hank?
Well, I think you're going to tell me, as I reported, that the new Apple products don't have the hardware to be able to take advantage of 5G LTE.
And when do you think that 5G LTE is going to be rolled out by T-Mobile? When will it really be available to the public?
Well, I don't know when they're going to roll it out, but I think that what happened was that when the spectrum was made available for bidding by the FCC, they had estimated that it would take 2 years to roll it out because of the technology. And unbeknownst to the FCC, what T-Mobile did was they partnered with Qualcomm and actually came up with the hardware to accelerate the use of the spectrum. So when they first won the award, instead of it being 2 years, they said they shocked everyone by saying, "We're going to have it ready, readily available in 6 months." And everyone was poo-pooing it. And guess what? They got it available in 6 months. And what some of the manufacturers did, I guess what Apple did was, hey, 2 years from now, tell you what, let's come up with this model. We don't have to put this in. And the next model that we announce, we'll have it in 2 years. So we're on time.
But instead of that, Hank, AT&T came out with their phone when?
Well, what they're saying is, hey, listen, if you know, T-Mobile is hot on their tail, especially with the talking about the inability of AT&T because they were denied by the government to merge with Sprint. And now they're talking about T-Mobile, you know, combining with Sprint and AT&T. I mean, they're like a number two. They don't want to be number three. So if they're going to do it, we're going to do it, too.
And so phones from using the 5G network are going to be available in a few months.
No. Actually, four of them are already available, and they happen to be the LG V30, the Samsung Galaxy 8, the Note 8, and there was a phone that I asked you about because I've never heard of it, but you have. It's called the ZTE Gigabit phone.
Yeah, that's coming out of mainland China.
Well, you know what? With these four phones out, especially with LG and Samsung, you think Apple might be pressured to come out with a capability?
I don't know if they will or won't, but I know that I've spoken to a few people who are Apple people. Their whole environment is Apple. And they're not ready to buy these 8 because they're saying, in essence, they're asking me to buy obsolete technology.
Well, Joe, let me ask you a question that I know you know the answer, but you know, for some of the people in the listening audience, they say, "Well, so what's so big deal about 5G LTE?"
Well, there's two things that are really important about it, Hank. There's three things. One is speed. It's got more efficiency than the 4G networks. The second, to somebody like me living on the 20th story of a high-rise building, it's got a very important thing that it's claimed that the 5G networks can reach within buildings with more clarity, more depth, and more length. So that's important to me. And the third thing is, forget
that. The rural area, the farmland area.
When you're out in the sticks, my brother-in-law happens to be a farmer in Pennsylvania, and he was really negotiating, trying to get a cell tower put actually on his property because it's the highest in the region. And he couldn't get it, and as a result, he had to switch out of Verizon into AT&T because that was the only signal that he could get. But if Verizon and AT&T and T-Mobile were all on this 5G, he could get all the signals.
Yeah, but Joe, you know, being a fanatic, it means you're a fan. That means, like, you're very loyal. So what if Apple doesn't have it? It'll be in the next model, which will probably come out maybe by the end of next year. So I'll buy a new one. I'll buy a new one today, and I'll buy another one next year.
Well, that's because you're rich.
No, I'm not rich, but, you know.
For people like me, $800 for a phone is a lot.
Wait. The 10 is $995.
I never planned on the 10. I was only going to buy the...
By the way, Joe, you know, you bought a new phone, and it's not the initial price. You know, the MSRP, the manufacturer's suggested,
retail
price. It's all the things you add to it before you know it, it's 10-20% higher than the listed price.
Well, in this particular case, I was absolutely furious because they changed the port on it, the USB port, to the new Model C port or Type C port, which meant that all my cables and all my chargers and all my everything were obsolete for this phone. The positive thing about it was the other morning I woke up, my phone is generally being charged overnight, took up my phone, and instead of having a blank screen, there was the date right in the middle. I said, how'd that get there? And then I started doing some other things that weren't working at all. And I found out during the night I got the new Android...
Oreo.
Well, they call it Oreo.
Right.
I call it the Model 8, which is what it is. And I don't know why they call it Oreo. Isn't that a patented or copyrighted trade name?
I don't know. But, Joe, let me just say this, that I know you enjoy the status of leading edge, and with that comes the bleeding edge.
And you can bleed. I don't have, so far, the only minor problem I have with this is the battery seems to last half as long.
Hey, Joe, you know, you were...
You went over that pretty fast.
Yeah, I know that.
First,
because
they took away from me the ability to have an extra battery in my pocket. Now they're automatically killing my battery life by 50%.
Yeah, but there's something even worse than that, okay? At least from your point of view, it should be worse than that, is that on a drop test, it performs worse than the older model.
Oh, no, now we're talking back to the Apple, not the my phone. I don't have that.
No, not your phone. I'm talking about the new Apple.
Well, wait a minute, Hank, because I listened very carefully to that press release.
Oh, come on. You know, with press releases, they're marketing hyperboles.
Well, excuse me. I knew that with Steve Jobs. As a matter of fact, we used to joke about it and call the Steve Jobs reality distortion field.
So why can't we continue to have it?
But because Cook said he was going to be absolutely straight. And what he said was that Apple has for this phone, the Model 8, a fully glass back, and it's the strongest glass ever made, on the strongest glass on a cell phone ever made.
Well, it could be the strongest, but it doesn't mean that it's better than the metal back.
No.
Right? Right? Am I right?
That's correct. But I somehow questioned when people, I don't care whether it's the president or Apple, when anybody uses the strongest, the best, the biggest, I worry about it. So I did a little research, not heavy, just by using Google. And I found out that on a standardized drop test, using a standardized drop test machine, the same one that Consumers Union uses, that the Motorola, I think it's called the Motorola Z, I'm not sure what the model is,
right,
did better on the drop test. That is, it didn't crack as soon as it was tested. In other words, how to put this scientifically without insulting anybody. Hank, in other words, Apple was lying.
No, come on. I mean, look.
All right. Apple wasn't lying. They were. Misstating the truth.
Well, now, wait a minute now. This is strongest glass used in a smartphone, but you're comparing it to a non-glass back, okay?
No, I'm comparing it glass back to glass back. Motorola has one phone that was or is a glass back phone, and it beat on the drop test. It beat now. I got to tell you.
Now, wait a minute, Joe. Let me just question that, okay? If I have that same glass. But were you comparing the thickness as being identical? Because thicker than the other.
I was comparing a cell phone to a cell phone, a drop test to a drop test. If he was saying that it's the strongest glass ever made, and then if he said, however, we're using it so much thinner that it won't work, that's fine. I could accept that. But if he's misstating the fact or implying that the fact is there, you know, I was in the hospital the other day, and a young doctor was examining my shoulder, and she didn't want to look me in the eye and said, "It's because you're getting old, Joseph."
Well, isn't that true?
she said instead, "How can I phrase it?" She looked at me and she said, "Your shoulder is youthfulness challenged."
Hey, Joe, you know what I always tell people about growing old? When you consider the alternative, not bad growing old.
I don't know. Do you consider the alternative to be spiritual rejuvenation or perhaps you? Now, let's not go there.
No, Joe. By the way, when you first told me about the glass with the, you know, with that glass test, so I actually did a little more looking into it. And there was another test that was done by a different organization, and they had the same identical results, except that they tested more than just the iPhone 8 and 10. They also tested the Galaxy the S8. And it had the same identical problem as the Apple. In other words, with a glass back.
But why didn't the Motorola have that problem?
Well, because that's why I brought up the fact that did they measure the thickness to make sure that they were comparing the same thickness? Because if the thickness is not the same, the characteristics don't change, but the thickness can alter when it breaks.
Well, a lot of things can happen that can alter the test.
And also, a smaller piece of glass is harder to break than a bigger sheet of glass.
I was going to point that out. When Gorilla Glass 2, which is, I think, three generations ago, came out, I was at a trade show, and they gave me a piece of Gorilla Glass to test. And they had next to it, I think it was close to an 8x10 sheet, but they didn't want to waste that whole sheet, so they gave me a little 2x3 test. And I put pressure on it, and nothing happened. And I said, well, that's truly amazing. But then the next guy behind me, who was looking through the same booth, he was a wise guy, and he took their pressure test, but he did it on the 8x10 sheet, which snapped immediately into a bunch of pieces. So you're right, Hank, on that. But I think the important thing is, and this goes not just for Apple or for Samsung or for the Republicans or the Democrats, it's really important for you not to try and fudge. Just tell the goddamn truth and be done with it.
Well, you're talking about telling the truth. There's another item, a big news item that came out that's on everyone's mind, and that's Equivax. The CEO finally resigned, and he's walking away with $18 million of his pension, which they did not, because they could have taken that pension away from him.
Was this pension or was this a delayed golden parachute?
It was a golden parachute, okay. 18, and you know, and some of the things that bothers me is that it seems like with corporate white-collar crime, no one ever goes to jail.
Well, because sometimes it's not a crime.
Yeah, I know. So I looked up the definition of negligence because now I think in this case, Well, now
there can also be there can also be criminal negligence. This is not it.
Well, no. But the thing is there a difference between stupidity and negligence?
Oh yes.
But you can't sue someone for stupidity, can you?
No, you can just elect them to office.
I mean, look at all the
Let me tell you something that you may not know, because the news just came out earlier today, Hank. The city attorney or whatever, the district attorney or city attorney for the city of San Francisco, has filed a lawsuit against Equifax.
That's the
first of many, because he's going to try to assemble a group. And I'm sure that as soon as he does that, other law firms are going to do the same thing. My problem is this, and it's a very basic problem. A lot of money may be paid out by Equifax, but let's face it, Equifax is a finite size. If they decide that each individual is going to suffer $1,000 worth of damage, and they've got to pay out 143 million times 1,000. Excuse me, that's never going to happen.
Well, I sent you an article where there's about 11 things that they screwed up on, and I think we've all know many of them, such as mea culpa and so on. Like, I didn't know. You mean to say that after the break-in happened, executives sold stock inside? I mean, common sense says you can't do that. And then the other thing is that they said, well, if you want to check whether or not you're affected or not, we do have a website you can go to, and there's a clause in there that you can't sue us go to arbitration.
That was withdrawn before I got there. You saw that.
And you know what? I kept a copy of it because guess what? It was in the original. In other words,
they're not denying that it was in the original.
I'm saying is that they knew about this in March, okay? No, seriously, they knew about it because they brought in a consultant to look at it. They set up a website, that website that we're talking about that doesn't say Equifax. It was done in March.
It does say Equifax, but it's not the Equifax site.
I know, but the thing was, they knew about this in March. The reported break-in was the stuff that, the vulnerability was there. And the reason why it was March, by the way, was when Apache released a patch, and they never implemented it.
And how soon after Apache released this patch were they broken into?
In July.
And when did Apache release it?
March. Wait. And then they reported, it happened. And you know when they reported? First week in September. You're saying, wait a minute. That is that negligence or stupidity, or is that just plain they're not doing their job?
Well, not doing their job can engender negligence or vice versa. The problem I have is you're saying to me that Apache stated publicly that there was this ability to break into an Apache setup, and then 3 months after Apache publicized that fact, somebody used that vulnerability to break in, and that bothers me a bit. But, Hank, you and I talked about this, and it seems to me that you were the one who said there ought to be a law.
Yeah. Wait. But before we talk about that, one of the things I do want to say is that, in the interest of the for public interest, okay, we have three organizations: TransUnion, Equifax, and what's the other one?
I'm sorry.
Okay, but you know what I mean, okay? And the thing is, if Equifax was put out of business because of this, they don't deserve to be in business. Is that really beneficial to get down to two? Get down to two companies?
No, there'd still be three. There's another one whose name I can never remember.
Oh,
but right now there are four. But my problem with that is, when I went to TransUnion, it was very simple to sign up. Well, to put a freeze on was very simple. They made it even easier to get their free, no-charge lock. They claimed the lock was as good as a freeze. I'm not sure about that. When I went to Equifax to put the freeze on, I had to not only go through a number of steps, but I had to wait until they sent me back an email 2 days later to go in and do it. The third one that I, for some reason, can't think of the name of at the moment.
It starts with an E.
Yes, it does.
But let me ask you, would it be healthy for the nation to say, let's put them out of business?
Yes, it would be. And to have it taken over by something like the FDIC took over savings bank and non-federal banks during the right after the Depression, which was caused by them.
Then there ought to be a law to do that.
And indeed, there should be a law, perhaps very similar to the law that they now have in Germany. Incidentally, I say that really making a fist against myself, because I don't ever want to do anything that Germany does.
Well, let me put it this way. In the second half of the show, I actually proposed a law with somewhat tongue-in-cheek. And after I had pre-recorded it, Joe says to me, were you serious about it? I says, no. I mean, look, when I say there ought to be a law, it's my way of saying there's no law. It's never going to happen. And then you said to me, oh, yeah, guess what? There is such a law in Germany. And I said, wow. Sometimes, was it the fiction is a stranger than truth or what?
Truth is stranger than fiction.
I thought it was the other way around.
No. In this case, the other way around might be right. But yeah, it's really peculiar that this goes on that way, Hank. It's...
Well, Joe, look,
here's the thing. Yeah. None of us can get along without these, what are they called, credit bureaus or whatever. If you want to buy a house, you need a good reference from them, a good number. If you want to buy a car, you need a good number from them. If you want to get a credit card, you need a good number from them. And yet, Hank, do you know that there is no law controlling what they do and what they say?
Yeah, well, that is my problem, Joe, because that's an awful lot of personal data, and a lot of it's really private, and a great deal is collected in the interest of being able to verify who you are. But in reality, a lot of information is none of their business, and it really has nothing to do with it. And a lot of it's just used for marketing, okay? It's not really for verification. It's for marketing.
Well, no. Most of it is used really for verification. But in addition to that, they're able to use computers to reorganize that data and then sell it to people.
Now, let me tell you something, Joe, because I do have experience on this, okay, is that you get these private enterprise, you know, people in social media collecting all their information and so on. But when the government does it, it's infuriating, okay, when the government does it. And they do it. And you know what the worst part is?
When does the government do it?
They sell it.
Who, the government?
Yes.
What does the government
Okay, sell? I'll give you a perfect example, okay? Did you know that, and I've done it, all right, that many a board of elections sell the data they have. In fact, there are a number of them that will give you 20 years of data. And even if you change parties.
About local boards of election.
Right.
So when you're saying government, you're not talking about Washington.
To me, they represent the government.
You're not talking about Washington. You're talking about local governments. Let's be clear.
You know what? Government can exist in the form of local, state, or federal.
You're not saying it's the same thing.
Right. Now, well, let me give you the example, okay?
I'll give you an example. Does each of those local government, which you're saying is the same thing, do they have an army, a navy, and an air force? Can they bomb me if they don't like, if New Jersey's government, can they bomb me or shoot me? Don't exaggerate it. The local government is one thing. The federal government is something.
Well,
else.
Let me put it this way. I could say that it's not a small sector of local government. It's a wide sector where many local governments basically have the same information. Where I could get 20 years of data on your voting history. In other words, you could be registered in one party, you switch party, and I still have that information intact.
Yes, but worse than that, Hank.
And then I know when did you participate in voting, especially, and you know what they target people for? people vote in the primary because they know that if you vote in the primary, you are very valuable in information that you're going to vote the same way in party affiliation.
Yes. And that information is available, but what makes you think the parties take advantage of it? And my point is this. I once was registered in one party. Now I'm registered in a different party, and I still get solicitations from both parties.
Right. And we will never be able to outlaw it because the politicians will never pass a law to say to prevent them from getting that information.
The phone calls that I got before the current primary was so disturbing that two people who were running for office using their robocalls, finally a live person called me from each of them, and I informed them that I would not vote for either candidate because of the way they did their politics.
Well, you're talking about robocall. New York State is an excellent example where the do not call list, there are waivers, okay?
Oh, they're off of the federal do not call list also.
And if you're a politician, you don't have to observe the do not call list.
And if you're a charity, you don't either.
Correct. And you're saying, wait a minute, a smart private enterprise could say, I'm going to go get the do not call list because I got, but guess what? Those are real, that's hard information. And what's stop me from using that list and I use a different name every day? And you know,
what makes you think that's not being done right now?
You know, the same voice, the same message. This is your final call on your credit card rating.
Do you know that if you have, what do they call internet telephones?
Mm-hmm. VoIP,
thank you.
Right.
Voice over IP. You can put into your system a very simple app that will notify every robocaller that they have reached an out-of-service number.
By the way, I apologize. Sometimes my mind thinks in two different tracks, okay? The name is Asperian.
I had just looked it up.
I know.
Listen, there's
one quick story I do want to...
tell them what name is Asperian.
Experian and TransUnion are the other two.
Equifax, Experian, and TransUnion are three of the four credit bureaus. And the fourth one, nobody really knows the name of, but it's out there.
Okay. Now, there's something I do want to cover quickly because we're getting to the second half of the hour. And that is the fact that it was ruled very recently that a company cannot ban you from giving a bad review on the terms and conditions because you buy product, and the terms and conditions is you can't give a bad review.
Yes, and I'm not sure of why they were able to put that ruling in. What was the Supreme Court understanding of the law? I'm not really sure. Somebody once said to me, well, that's the First Amendment. But no, the First Amendment clearly states government cannot institute a law that abridges your freedom of the press. But nevertheless, that has now gone through. And if you want to...
No, Joe, there are exceptions, okay? I could sue you even though I don't have the basis.
You can sue anybody for anything.
Right. I can sue you. And if you don't have the means of, financial means of defending yourself, who wins?
Well, actually, you can represent yourself and go down to the courthouse and say to the judge, this is barratry. This is lawsuit without law behind it. And the lawyers who brought that would be then violating a federal law.
Hey, I got to remember that. By the way, you were telling me something that Alfred was going to talk about something?
Hey, he's talking to – I spoke to him earlier. And he's talking about something really exciting and almost unbelievable. You got to listen to him tonight.
Well, what's he going to talk about?
He's going to talk about a little doohickey that's wearable tech that has no broadcasting capability, whose signal can be picked up a mile and a half away.
Well, I'll tell you what, in our second half hour, we have a lot of interesting segments. So, by the way, I also did a segment on a proposed law. And I did it tongue-in-cheek, and you say...
That's not a proposed law. That exists throughout Europe.
No, wait a minute. Not in the United States, though, right?
No, and not for the dollar amount you're talking.
Well, you know what? Why don't we just get to that second half right now? We have pre-recorded segments. The first is by Dr. Alfred Poor on wearable and health technology in which he covers goggles help low vision users see, glucose level readings on your Fitbit smartwatch, and a new low-cost, low-power way to send data from sensors over long distances. And I've asked Marty Winston to address the issue of home automation, in which ransomware with remote controlling devices can interfere with the Internet of Things. So let's get on with it, and let's start off with Alfred Poor.
Hello, this is Alfred Poor with news about wearable technology from Health Tech Insider. There are more than 240 million people worldwide who have limited vision. In many cases, they're even legally blind, even though they can still see a little bit. A company from Toronto called eSight has just released the latest version of a device that they have to help these people see their surroundings better. It looks like a pair of virtual reality goggles, and actually, that's pretty much what it is. The device has cameras on the goggles, and then that image gets processed by an external controller and then fed to display panels within the goggles. And the user can adjust the display depending on what the situation is. So, for example, if they're walking down the street, they can set it to a wide-angle view so that they can see where the obstacles are. If they're looking at a sign and they're trying to read the sign, they can zoom in. The device has a 24 times magnification setting, so you can zoom right in. And the user also can control the contrast and the colors so that they can enhance the image so that they get the best contrast and makes it the most legible for them. It's not an inexpensive device. It runs about $10,000, but the company does help put customers in touch with possible funding sources that can help cover the cost of the device. This is a handy, wearable, mobile device that can help people who may be legally blind see well enough to navigate and make their way around independently. People with diabetes have to monitor their blood sugar levels carefully throughout the day. In many cases, it can be inconvenient, uncomfortable, even embarrassing because you know, you're busy at work or school or wherever you might be, and to have to do a finger prick and test strip and run it through the meter and see what your settings are. You know, it's obtrusive and again, it can be embarrassing. So one of the interesting and wonderful new devices that have come on the market recently is a device called a continuous glucose monitor, a CGM. One of the companies that makes these is a company called Dexcom. Basically, this is a little device that you stick to your stomach, the skin on your stomach, and a very tiny needle will constantly measure your blood sugar and can report it throughout the day without you needing to do a finger stick. Still, you have to consult a smartphone or other device to check your blood sugar levels. Again, this could be inconvenient or, you know, you might not want everybody else to know. Dexcom has started a project with Fitbit, the fitness band people, and Fitbit has recently come out with their Ionic smartwatch. And so a collaboration with Dexcom will allow owners of the Fitbit Ionic smartwatch to get the readouts from their Dexcom CGM right on the watch face. So it looks like you're just checking the time and you can be getting your blood sugar reading. Much less intrusive, no chance for embarrassment, and it keeps your diabetes maintenance private. Wearable devices for health tech are going to become a huge business, as I've mentioned many times before. But in order for them to really take off, they have to do what I call disappear into our lives. And by that I mean it has to be something that is unobtrusive, doesn't take a lot of fussing for you to take care of it or maintain it. If you have to take it off every night and plug it in or set it up to be recharged, that's a hassle. You have to remember to put it back on again. Basically, for me, the standard of comparison is a good old-fashioned $25 wristwatch. Runs on batteries for 2 or 3 years at a time. You set it once, you never have to set it again. It's just there when you need it, and you can ignore it when you don't. So one of the problems is that these sensors and other devices that we wear on our bodies to collect health information, they have to get that data someplace else. And often that's done through wireless transmission. The problem with that is the transmission distance is often limited. In some cases with Bluetooth, for example, you're limited to about 30 feet for most devices, in some cases much less than that. And in addition to that, even those low-power Bluetooths still require a fair amount of power. And so in order to make that work, you either have to put in a bigger battery, which makes the device larger and more cumbersome, or you have to recharge it more often. And neither of those are really convenient attributes for a product that we want to have disappear into our lives. There may be a solution out there. There's a group at the University of Washington who've come up with a very clever system that can transmit data over long distances using almost no power. And it uses a feature called backscatter. Basically, it works with radio waves to alter the radio waves as they go by in a way that can then be decoded and information can be extracted from it. As an example, think about a signal mirror. You know, Boy Scouts have the little mirror they can signal in case of emergency or communicate with each other. And how does that work? Well, basically, it takes light from the sun, and the light from the sun comes and hits a mirror, which is passive. It has no power. It doesn't make any light of its own. But by manipulating the mirror, you can cause the reflected light to go in different places. So you can aim at your target, and you can flash the light on and off to your target and communicate that way. So if you think about it, you can send that information for miles, but it requires almost no power to do that. Well, backscatter works much the same way. You can have a device that will interfere with radio waves in a predictable way that can then be decoded by a receiver. How good is this? They've actually done this with a device and transmitted the data reliably over 1.7 miles. We're not talking about 3 feet or 30 feet or even 300 feet. We're talking 1.7 miles that this system can work. They've set it up in a 4,000 square foot house with three floors, and it's worked throughout. They set it up in a large office that had 41 different rooms, and they've been able to make it work from end to end. The interesting thing about it is it uses almost no power because, like that signal mirror, it doesn't transmit. It only interferes with the radio waves that are going by. So all you need is a transmitting station and a receiving station, and these other devices, and there can be more than one, can interfere with those signals, and the receiver can then interpret that and get the data from it. The amazing thing about this is that they expect to be able to produce the microchip that would cause this backscatter device to work. They figure that the production cost in volume should get down to about 10 cents a piece. 10 cents. So this means that the cost of adding a way of transmitting information to a sensor or other device costs almost nothing and would be easy to add. So they're looking at this certainly for health tech wearables and make it easy for people to wear something. You know, the charge would last forever since it uses very little power. Might last forever, especially if you could partner it with some sort of energy harvesting system. But they're also looking at it for things like soil sensors for farmers, scatter them throughout the field, and they don't need much power in order to send the data that they have from their sensors off to the base station. So this is a really interesting device. The researchers have actually created a company, which they call Jeeva Wireless, J-E-E-V-A Wireless. They're already in business, and they hope to have their first devices in production by as early as next spring. So this is a kind of an interesting development. It could make wearable devices last longer and transmit information much further, helping them just to disappear into our lives.
For more information, go to healthtechinsider.com. This is Alfred Poor. Thanks for listening.
Thank you, Alfred.
There ought to be a law on social media. The following statement is a personal view that is not necessarily shared by the station or anyone associated with the show. But I feel strongly that there ought to be a law on personal information collected by social media organizations. I want to keep in contact with friends and family members without having my personal data packaged for advertisers without my consent or knowledge. My presence on social media is thus kept to a minimum. Like many others, I value my privacy. It's become a phrase repeated so frequently that it's almost like a cliche. If you're not paying for the product, you are the product. And even when I'm paying for a product, my personal information is sold to marketing organizations as customer acquisition value. The truth is that hundreds of millions of us put up with the unpleasant fact that chunks of our personal lives, our photos, emails, and our whereabouts and contacts are combined and packaged to sell ads by Facebook, Google, Twitter, and other social media organizations because they provide people with valuable marketing information. However, the personal information collected is without my consent, nor am I aware of all the collection points. To add to insult, I don't even get a penny from any of the sale of the data. There are many people we all have in our lives who will not sign up for social media accounts, sometimes because they're taking a principled stance, but mostly because they find the whole experience very intrusive. It is a very simple proposed law. Personal information cannot be captured or retained unless written permission has been explicitly given. It is an opt-in, not an opt-out, as if there was such a thing as an opt-out. All personal information collected to date by social media must be destroyed within 30 days. If the data is not destroyed, there is a fine of $100,000 per account, and that fine goes to the injured party. Would this ever become law? Who knows? I could ask.
I want to talk to you about ransomware. Now, in our house, the 40-year house, Cybernetic House Project, 40yearhouse.com, has more info. You'll find one of our principals forbids outside network, meaning WAN, wide area network, access for any of our controllers, surveillance systems. It's not worth the risk to make the house remote controllable from me on my cell phone, because if I can get at it, so can every Russian hacker. Where's ransomware figure? And well, we saw an example not so very long ago when a hacker got into a guy's home automation thermostat and set his house to hot as he could make it and wouldn't let the thermostat go until the guy paid him a ransom. Ransom, and the guy did pay. I think that's unfortunate. The guy did pay. He never thought of unplugging the thermostat or putting in a standard one for a lot less money and less bother. He paid. He likes being on the cloud. I don't like being on the cloud. We know why companies go to the cloud. It means they can put fairly dumb hardware out in your hands, let it come to the cloud for whatever things it needs to make, and it's a read the status and then remote control it, update the software in one place on the cloud, and it's a much cheaper way to come to market. It's a bit of a cheap trick, too, because their security isn't any better than all of those bits of data theft from the cloud you read about all the time. So I want to talk about ransomware, and let's go with this theory. Remote control of stuff, even if the remote control seems friendly, lets the bad guys in. If Alexa can do it, Alexi can do it. How about your doors? Do you have one of those lovely cloud-connected electronic door locks? If I'm collecting ransomware, what do? Do I keep it locked all the time and not let you out? Or do I keep it unlocked all the time so your home isn't safe? Which one would get you to pay? We don't know which one they're going to try, but whichever one it is, you don't want to be the victim. Your security system, right? What if it sets you up for repeated false alarms? Every few minutes, it's calling the police. The police have to respond. How friendly are they to that? In most communities, it comes with a fairly stiff charge, and you're going to be paying those charges if you don't rip the whole thing out or pay the ransomware. Sprinkling systems. Drown your lawn if you don't pay the ransom. We're doing that again. I mentioned security alarms. What about, and this one doesn't have to call the fire department, what about your smoke and fire alarm? All they have to do is keep that going every 10 minutes and you can't get a moment of sleep, a moment of concentration. You're going to pay the ransomware? You're going to rip all that gear out. Ransomware takes advantage of your loss of control when you volunteer your loss of control to the cloud. How about your lights? Yeah, they could just run up your electric bill. Of course, if you switch to LED lights, that's less of a big deal. But the other thing they could do is keep it dark when you want light. That could be dangerous for you. Keep it light when you want dark. How would you like to have your lights flashing on and off all night long? Would you get a good night's sleep out of that? How would the kids feel? Ransomware. Garage door. You've got the cloud-connected garage door. What happens if they keep it open when you want it closed, or they keep it closed when you want to get out of there? Ransomware. Your TV set? How about keeping your TV set on at full volume? Never letting it turn off. Never letting it change channels unless they change the channel to pull up all pay-per-view programming. Unless you pay the ransomware. Are we getting on a theme now? You've connected it to the cloud because you're such a techie guy, right? It's never that much fun. You know, any music player has that same turn it up full volume and don't let it turn off kind of vulnerability sitting right there. Imagine what they could do with your coffee maker, with your washing machine, with your refrigerator. All of the things that you want to connect to the house, all of the things that you want to talk to Alexa to make something happen, all of the things that you think are such marvelous toys and novelties to show off to your friends can stab you in the back if you get the Russians interested in collecting ransomware from you. So, what can you do to stop that? Well, for most people, the answer is panic. What's your answer? Are you willing to unplug this stuff? Are you willing to disconnect it? What if you only disable your router? Oh, what have you lost now? I think the best answer is you don't go to the WAN in the first place. You don't connect to the cloud. As soon as sales drop, when the cloud is part of the sales premise, you can count on the vendors to find another way. Every one of them brags about their security, but so did the banks and insurance companies and government agencies that got hacked, that had all of their data go to the bad guys. The same bad guys who want to enjoy the prosperity that comes with lucrative American ransomware payments. The FBI stopping them? I haven't seen it. How about the guys who keep unplugging the spammers? I haven't seen them be effective against the ransomware gang. Now, maybe there's something happening I don't know about. Ransomware is inevitably an opportunity created by connecting to the cloud. Now, am I picking on the cloud? Yeah, a little. Because the cloud is a term that people regard as warm, fuzzy, and friendly. Remember, when we say cloud, all we're talking about is a server located at somebody else's address. That's what it means. It's a server that you don't control, that's not at your place, it's at somebody else's place, you don't know where, you don't know who's running it, you don't know for sure what their security levels are, you don't know if they're equipped to respond to it, you don't know if they have or can get at the necessary resources. You don't know much of that for most of the people who run services connected to the cloud. Are they using one of the very secure giants? The secure giants have their own issues. There is no point of invulnerability. There is no, in DC Comics terms, fortress of solitude for your home automation. Well, can you do home automation without the cloud? Well, of course you can. It might not be off the shelf. It might take a little more work. But then again, really, are you wanting to remote control so very many things with your smartphone? Or by talking to Echo or doing anything like that. Don't get me wrong. I love Amazon. I love they've come up with the novelty of Alexa. I love that people are enjoying it. I don't love that sniffing that gravy train so many companies in the home automation category are working so hard to announce their compatibility with Alexa. Really, guys, stand on your own two feet. Stop trying to piggyback on the success of others. It's capitalism, sure, but it's also capitalism at the expense of the people who pay you the money for this stuff. Not very responsible as a seller, is it? Let's have a contest. What would you like to collect ransomware for? You want to collect it for sock drawers? Don't have a way to do that. You want to collect it for the kitchen sink? There might be a way to do that. Because why? Because there are cloud-connected water leak detectors that turn off water in the house. That's all it takes. That's all it takes. Something with a noble purpose that decided to go through the cloud for your convenience. Convenience in this case means vulnerability. Can I be more succinct? I'm not an alarmist by nature. At the same time, I know which dark alleys to avoid in the middle of the night in the bad neighborhoods of major cities. And that's what the cloud is. A dark alley with thugs waiting. Waiting to collect ransom. I'd like to take a sharp stick and push it back up, back up, back up where it hurts them. How about you, Hank?
Thank you, Marty. Public service announcements of Northeast Regional Tri-State Computer Club meetings. These meetings are all free and open to the public. Brookdale Computer Users Group will have a presentation on teaching people how to use modern computing devices. They meet Thursday, September the 28th, 6:45 p.m. at the Middletown Library Lodge Meeting Room at 55 New Monmouth Road, Middletown, New Jersey. The Danbury Area Computer Society will meet on Tuesday, October the 3rd at 7:30 p.m. at the Danbury Hospital Auditorium in Danbury, Connecticut. The Westchester PC Users Group will have a presentation on Nuance's Dragon Speaking, Thursday, October the 5th, 7 p.m. is the meeting time at the Keller Williams Realty at 120 Bloomingdale Road, first floor in White Plains, New York. The Amateur Computer Group of New Jersey will have a presentation from AT&T on ATT Digital Life Home Automation. Presentation is Friday, October the 6th at 8 p.m. at the Scotch Plains Rescue Squad, 1916 Bartle Avenue in Scotch Plains, New Jersey. The New York Amateur Computer Club will have a presentation on web accessibility for the challenge. Thursday, October the 12th, meeting time is 7 p.m. at NYU, 32 Waverly Place, Silver Building, room 401, 31 Washington Place, Manhattan, New York. Long Island Mac Users Group will be meeting on Friday, October the 13th, Friday the 13th at 7 p.m. at the New York Institute of Technology, Old Westbury Campus, located at Northern Boulevard and Valentine's Lane in the Anna Rubin Hall, or what is known as the 300 Building. All are welcome, and we hope to meet you at the meetings. If you have a computer club meeting that you want us to announce for you, just send it to me, hank@pcradioshow.org, and give me the name of the club, the location of the meeting, the date of the meeting, and the time, and include a URL of how people can get more information on the internet, and we would like to know more about the subject matter itself. Get it to me by Monday at the latest if you want it announced on the following Wednesday show. The website for the Personal Computer Show is www.pcradioshow.org, and we communicate via Twitter at PCRadio212. We can be heard each Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on PRN.FM on the Internet and at 9 p.m. Eastern Time on WBAI-FM, 99.5 New York on the radio, or WBAI.org streaming on the Internet. In the meantime, stay in touch and keep on computing and back up, back up, and back up. I'm Hank Key, and on behalf of Joe King and Michael Horowitz, we thank you for listening. Stay safe and keep cool until we meet again. Same time, same station next week.